This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago and beyond, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. Today is Thursday, July 18th. Cecil, what did I miss? I've been gone for a week.
Nothing really. I mean, just it's been real quiet.
Quiet week.
Can't think of anything else that happened.
Fucking.
I mean, like
Christ.
You know, I think Biden gave a press conference.
Okay. All right. We should cover the press conference. You guys. And I saw some comments like, of course this happens like while Tom's trying to take a news break.
But it turns out they thought you were taking this week off.
Right.
So I had to correct people and be like, no, he already took his week off.
Well, I already got my week off.
The week was already off. It was Saturday night of his week off.
It was fun.
So he was going to roll into that on Sunday morning anyway.
Yeah. It was just so funny though. Cause I'm just chilling out at home and I'm like, studiously avoiding the news, which by the way, if you have a series of life habits that revolve around compulsively checking the news is actually really difficult to break.
I bet it's really difficult to break. You know, when I'm on vacation and away from Wi-Fi, it's so easy.
Yeah.
And you just forget. Like, you just forget. Because there's like, you know, like I do that medieval recreation thing.
Uh-huh.
And so that thing, when I go away for that, I don't look at any of my email or my other stuff for like a week.
God,
and it's amazing.
Crazy. Yeah.
When I've traveled out of country and you don't have good service, don't see it for a week. So that's totally different than if you're just sitting at home being like, man, I'd like to go to Reddit.
Yeah, like, don't look at the news. Don't look at the news.
Yeah.
But I was doing it. I was doing a great job, guys. I really was. I did not. So I have a series of habits every morning. I've got my shows I listen to. I read the Times every day. I peruse the Post in the Wall Street Journal. I don't want to say like I read them, but I read the Times. And I peruse the other two and I do it in this kind of a certain order. You know, you've got your day. You've got your day. And then I kind of habitually just reopen my news apps from time to time to see if anything new has happened.
Right.
You know, so I'll just like, I've nothing to do.
Sometimes on occasion.
Every once in a while.
On occasion.
I was not doing any of that.
Yeah.
I was not doing any of that. And then I get the text from Cecil.
I got a text from someone else who told me. And so I immediately went to Reddit and there's a picture. Within the first 10 seconds of being there, there's a picture of him being pushed down to the ground, Trump being pushed down to the ground. If you're unfamiliar with what we're talking about, if you somehow took a news break with Tom, there was an assassination attempt on Trump's life. And I immediately texted you, boom, blah, blah, blah. And like we started talking about it right away. And I was actually going out to dinner that night. So some of this stuff that was happening, that's happening, because I was at dinner while we were chatting, because I wasn't in front of a computer and there was stuff you were finding that I had no opportunity to find.
Yeah. Well, and you were telling me stuff too. Cause it's so funny, guys. Cause like in my house, I don't have television and like you have, I think, cable.
I have cable.
So you're getting stuff I'm not getting. And I'm like, well, where did he find that? You know, cause I'm just opening up like my news sites that I use.
Yeah. And some of these places didn't want to go on the record.
Right.
With some things early. So New York Times is really, they make sure to verify very often what they're seeing.
If it's
a news reporting story, lots of times they don't verify shit if it's an opinion story.
That's very true.
But if it's not, it's pretty hard reporting. They do a good job. So, but a very interesting moment, side note, Butler, Pennsylvania. I've stayed in the Holiday Inn in Butler, Pennsylvania. I've been to Butler, Pennsylvania maybe I don't think it's an exaggeration to say 20 to 30 times in my life.
Holy shit.
It's 12 miles north or 20 miles north of Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, which is where that Midover Recreation
Society
gets together.
That's your neck of the woods.
And goes every year for this huge thing called Pensac. And so I've been to Pensac,
yeah.
And Butler is the big city around there. So it's the big city around,
right.
And it's a tiny little town.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where he was when this happened. And as soon as they said Butler, Pennsylvania, I said, holy shit, I can't believe it. Like, it's literally a stone's throw away from this thing that happens it used to be August, now it's late July.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with the area even, so... Yeah, but in any case, crazy night.
Crazy night.
Really crazy night.
Lots to talk about.
He got hit in the ear, got taken down, and then they dragged him away. Iconic photo.
I got to tell you, I fucking hate that piece of shit, but I have to acknowledge that he created for himself probably the greatest photo op.
It's an amazing
possible.
Photo op.
And it's an amazingly
if you
good
are,
photo op.
If you're a patron of the show, you'll hear this week we're going to be covering not just only the Art of the Deal, the second half of Art mm-hmm. of the Deal on the patron show, but we'll also be covering the article written by his ghostwriter.
Yeah.
So on the Thursday show, that's for patrons only, we'll be covering that stuff because we did the first half of the Art of the Deal. And this is right in line with his thinking, right?
Yes.
Every second of the day, try to make a photo op. Every second of the day, be pushing your own brand. Every second of the day, be creating your own publicity.
Yeah.
And he did a great job of doing that for himself.
He really
immediately
did.
Right after.
He really did. And like the crowd, even in the middle of this event, after he stands up and like thrusts his fucking stupid, fat, chubby little tiny fingered fist in the air, the crowd erupts into chants of USA, USA.
Sure. Yeah.
Which, by the way,
is weird.
Is the, like, that is like the lowest IQ chant we do.
Yeah,
you know,
it really
like,
is.
It's like, whenever I hear it, I'm like embarrassed to hear you.
Me too.
I would never want to be in a crowd that's chanting USA. Cause I'm like, oh, these are not my people.
Yeah.
These are not my
people. The only people who should be chanting USA is when the Iron Sheik takes on Hulk Hogan. That's the only time I'll
I thought you were going to say the Iron Chef.
I'll allow it in the Iron Chef too, Tom. I'll allow it for Iron Chef as well. Although I won't do that for Bobby Flay.
The Iron Chef versus Hulk Hogan would be interesting.
I think it'd be pretty badass too. It was one of those moments though where there's been a lot of talk about people's reaction to it. And I'm happy that he didn't get killed.
Sure.
Because I think that would have been maybe a more galvanizing thing that happened to him. You know, there's many stories we can talk about in conjunction with this. One of the stories that we have is that there was Trump signs in this young man's yard who killed him. There was, this young man was a conservative. There's another report that says he was a conservative, that he had conservative views. There's a couple other reports here and there. One was that he might have donated $15 to a Democratic fund several years before he could vote. So there's been this trying of people to try to make it political. This has got to be political. That's the only reason, right? He's a political
it
target.
It doesn't make sense
It also, I don't think it is political. I think you have to twist yourself in knots to make this political. It's not a political assassination. It was an attempted assassination for somebody to get notoriety, and he happened to choose a political figure, but that doesn't necessarily make it inherently political. And what we saw afterwards was this, we need to tone down the political violence. That was the rhetoric.
The political rhetoric.
Everybody kept saying the political rhetoric's too high. This creating political violence. We don't need political violence. And you're seeing people from the right who don't denounce January 6th.
Right.
Who laughed when Nancy Pelosi's husband was beaten with a hammer.
Yep.
You know, these are people who have not only sowed the seeds of political violence, but they've also gone out of their way to encourage it. We've seen time and time and time again, this sort of thing on the right. And I think that what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, well, you guys need to denounce it. And I'm like, I do denounce political violence, but I also don't think that this was political violence.
Yeah, I think that based on what we know so far, we certainly can't say that this was political violence. Speculating about motive is always speculation, right? So what we don't have is any of the smocking gun stuff that would tell us what's really true.
Yep.
And in the absence, I think this is really important, like in the absence of evidence, we should not fill in our own evidence.
Yeah.
We should not fill in our own conclusions.
Sure.
What we know is that the 20-year-old kid, and 20 years is a kid. I mean, it just really is. And we don't know much else beyond that.
Yeah.
We really don't. In terms of like motivation, in terms of there doesn't seem to be any like, you know, manifesto. There doesn't seem to be any online
sure.
presence. There doesn't seem to be any notes. Now that stuff could pop up, right? That stuff could appear. So far today, the day that this is being recorded, July 18th, that stuff's unavailable.
Most of those people, when they make that stuff though, they want it to be found.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that could be like, it could be that he's just a young man in his early 20s, which is when people often experience the first signs of a psychotic break, if they're going to have one, who's connecting dots that don't connect and ended up doing something violent. And I know that like people are going to say like, hey, violence is not primarily something caused by mental illness. It's not. But when you look for motives without, you know, when you're trying to figure out how people like come to certain conclusions
sure.
when there's no evidence, that is a possible one. It doesn't mean that that's true. What we know is nothing. And what we should be careful about doing is filling in that gap.
Yeah.
As good, like critical thinkers and skeptics, like it's not our job to fill in that space. It is our job to leave that space open and let the facts fill in that space. And if we never get an answer, we don't get the answer.
Yeah.
And that's how that works.
And you don't get to ascribe something just because you want it.
Right. Right. I think though that like, I was thinking about this because obviously I do think that Trump is genuinely the most dangerous in the next 4 years, generationally dangerous,
sure.
like horrifyingly generationally dangerous. I think many, 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 many tens of thousands of people might die. I mean, I think Ukraine will certainly
sure.
lose.
No, I don't disagree.
So there was a part of me that thought initially like, man, I wish that this had turned out differently. But I don't actually think that in retrospect. Like, I don't think that, like, the part of me that is a more thinking person does not actually think that that would be good. And I don't think that that's good because, like, we can't have different standards. We can't be, like, morally and intellectually consistent and say, I want certain people to be murdered and other people don't get murdered. We can't have a vigilante system of sort of political justice. We this is not how any of this works. And when these events happen, what they do is they create a climate that can then be weaponized by people who have dangerous ideas
sure.
and ideologies. So nothing good comes of this. This is not a world we should encourage ourselves to say, I want to live in a world where people take pot shots at the fucking president or pot shots at the mayor. I absolutely abhor the violence of like breaking into fucking Nancy Pelosi's house and trying to kill her and beating her husband with a hammer and like the assassination attempt on Gretchen Whitmer, you know, the kidnapping and
sure.
assassination attempt of Gretchen Whitmer. Like I have to also abhor this. I do abhor this. And part of it is just practical.
Sure.
I think this is bad for the cause of democracy. This is not how democracies work. This is bad for the cause of democracy and moral justice.
And you're also constantly trying to decide, is this a good one or is this a bad one?
Right.
And so now you're constantly trying to be the goalie to be like, well, no, this one's bad. Okay, but this murder's good. This type of thing is bad all the time. And the other thing that I think people might say is, well, I feel vulnerable right now.
And totally get that.
I understand and empathize with those people. And they might say, well, Trump's going to do a lot of damage. And they'll make an analogy to something like a Hitler baby or something.
Sure,
you know,
right.
that
mm-hmm.
old
yeah,
right. analogy. And I would say to them, we already beat Trump. We already won.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it without violence. We beat him without violence. We just mobilized. And we went all over the country and we got votes and those votes counted and it mattered and he lost and he had to pick his shit up and cry his way to fucking Air Force Two and pack his stolen documents on it
yep.
and fly his big dumb ass down to fucking Mar-a-Lago and cry in his drink for a while because we beat him. So the idea that just because we're in and I think it's existential, right? Just because we're in that situation doesn't mean you need to resort to violence to fix that.
Yeah.
You don't have to. We can win this. It's possible. It's winnable.
Yeah.
It's able to be won. And I saw some of these Republicans afterwards were saying, if I have to hear, you know, this is the end of democracy one more time, you're the ones who caused this in us. And my answer to them is, stop being a threat to democracy, and I will stop calling you a threat to democracy.
Absolutely.
The assassination attempt on Trump's life will not change my language in the least. Trump has said he wants to be a dictator. Trump has a plan, 2025 plan, that's planning on removing people from the government that don't agree with him. That's a real thing that's going to happen. So you are a threat to democracy, period. End of story.
Yep.
I don't condone any violence to come from that, but I want people to know about it.
Oh, yeah, dude, right here. Like, I think that the rhetoric on the left that says, look, Trump is an authoritarian fascist who is seeking to subvert American democracy. Look, that's just true.
Yeah.
We should keep saying it. And like you said, the guy who shot at him does not appear to be motivated
by
an ideology at all. The little information that we do have at this time, again, July 18th, Thursday, but like, is that on his phone, there were searches for Biden and searches for Trump. He is not that far from where this rally was. This was probably opportunistic more than this was politically motivated. Again, I don't know that.
Yeah.
That's not a true fact that I'm saying, but I'm saying that there is a high likelihood that it might have just been opportunistic. There is no reason to believe that this was motivated by a political rhetoric. None at all. That information is a gap. That's a blank space. But again, this is part of why it's so dangerous to support these kinds of like this kind of violence, because it creates a blank space that everybody gets to write their narrative into when this kind of thing happens. Conspiracy theories abound. The fucking everybody gets to decide what the motivation, and then this becomes a giant political tool, and this should not exist. This is a lever and a photo op that should not exist, and we can't allow this to happen. We can't. We can't live in a democracy and have political candidates getting murdered.
No.
That's just unacceptable.
And you're absolutely right. And the reason why, one of the major reasons why is what you just said, which is there's who's making the decision. It's one person.
Right.
We don't want this one person in Trump to make decisions that could affect all of us, right? That could change the face of the United States, which is why we want to vote him out. This person is also pretty much the same thing. They're going to change the face of everything by their one decision. We don't allow that, and we shouldn't allow that.
This is fundamentally similar to why I oppose the death penalty.
Me too. Yeah.
Right? Fundamentally, this is the same thing.
It's the same thing.
It's not because there are not some people that I think are just bad and like have done awful things. Like there clearly have been terrible crimes that have been committed. And like, I look at some of the crimes that have been committed. I'm like, whoever committed that crime is irredeemable. I know you feel differently, but I feel like some people might actually be irredeemable, but I still do not want the death penalty because I don't trust anybody in charge to make that decision.
Right.
And if I don't trust anyone in charge to make that decision for a criminal or a potential criminal, I certainly do not trust any random person who in this country can swipe their fucking credit card and get a goddamn gun to go out and take matters into their own hands.
One of the things I heard a lot about and is that this might change the trajectory for Trump. This could be the thing that puts him over the edge. He got shot at, and this could be the thing that puts him over the edge. And I'm not sure I would have disagreed with somebody if this was politically motivated.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a politically motivated thing, I think it would put him over the edge. I think it would turn off anyone on the center, and it would essentially be something that would really be a pathway for him to become the president.
Right.
If it was a failed attempt. I think that this person not having clear political motives basically licked its fingers and shut that fuse off. There he hasn't seen a poll boost from it. It's really not something that initially everybody was saying, well, now he's won the race.
I texted that to you.
My response was, yep. Uh-huh. And I also agreed because I thought the same thing you did, which is it's politically motivated.
Yep.
But I didn't just see it from you, Tom. I saw it after the fact from dozens of people.
Yeah.
And this was after it even came out that he was, you know, quote unquote, a registered Republican. And I thought, well, no, not now. Yeah. Not now. I don't think this. I think that there is plenty of ways for someone to win this race against him.
Oh,
I don't think this is the thing that catapults him into the office.
Yeah, let's talk about that because that's the next most important thing we got to talk about. Trump is beatable.
Absolutely.
Trump is
absolutely
not. Trump, like, there is so much right now. The left is so fucking demoralized. The left is absolutely, like, I get this feeling online. I don't know if you get the same feeling. I get this feeling that the left is like, fuck, we're going to lose. Like, there's like a foregone. We cannot. That is not true.
Yeah.
That's not statistically true. It's not numerically true. It's not like what happens in July does not translate to November. We know it.
Yeah.
Don't look at polls right now in July and throw your hands in the air and say, oh, my God, the sky is fucking falling. The sky has not fallen until the last vote has counted.
And we don't even know.
I don't believe that he's unbeatable.
And we don't even know the night before.
That's right.
With those polls, who's going to win. Don't listen to polls. Don't think about polls. You know, maybe use those polls to get you through the evening, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, huff a little fucking laughing gas and read a poll and pass out. That's what I do. I don't know if they want to. Maybe you might want to try that. But seriously, there's no way to look at stuff this early. And even as we get closer, a lot of times it's off. It's harder nowadays for people to poll people. It just really is.
It is.
And it's harder to get a more accurate poll. Those numbers need to have larger error bars now than they ever did before.
Yeah,
and so I think it's one of those things where I'm not worried. But I also recognize too, there was a dip with that debate.
Sure.
I don't care what anybody says. I think a debate performance is a subjective thing. I think I can watch a debate and you could watch a debate and you might think, well, you know, maybe he did okay. And I could watch it and say, well, maybe he didn't do okay. I think it's subjective. I don't think there's an objective way to say this is.
Yeah, it's not a football game.
So there's no way to say. So I won't say that. But in my opinion, I watched that debate and I thought, wow, I don't think he won at all. I thought he looked pretty bad. And I thought he fumbled a lot in that debate and did a pretty bad job and really tarnished his reputation up till that point pretty badly. But I think that the stuff that happened afterwards was stuff I was hoping would have happened sooner.
Right.
But the stuff that happened afterwards, that press conference, those interviews that he did, I thought they were all very good.
His rally the next day.
His rallies. You know, I'm not as up on because that's just I think those are the easiest thing they do.
Sure. That's
but
true.
Like sitting across from somebody who's actually going to try to ask you hopefully a hardball question and then have to look them in the face. Getting questions from a random group of reporters for an hour
on
deep foreign policy, I was like, wow, it really did change my perspective on Biden after that debate. And I was like, good. If he stays the candidate, great. If he doesn't stay the candidate, great.
Yeah.
I'm okay with either way.
Man, let's clarify this because we've gotten a lot of like feedback on this. I think it is okay and reasonable to expect from the person who is asking you for this job that you see in them what you need to see in a leader.
Absolutely.
Right?
Don't disagree.
That is absolutely fair and reasonable. I also believe in my heart of hearts that no matter who is on the Democratic ticket, I don't care if it's fucking Air Bud.
Sure. If it's that Liz Truss lettuce.
Yeah. Vote.
I'll vote for it.
I will vote for it.
I'll turn that shit into a Caesar salad.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Dude, like, let's go. Let's go. Crunchy, crunchy. Like,
yeah, let's do it. It's not crunchy anymore. It's very wilty.
Dumb.
But yeah, because it's Liz Truss lettuce. It's been sitting out. But
still. I don't care who the Democratic candidate is. You got to vote for him.
Sure.
You have to vote for him.
If it's Uncle Joe, then it's Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
If it's not, you got to vote for that person.
Joe Biden, over the last 3.5 years, in my view, has done an exemplary job.
He's done a pretty good job.
I think
I wasn't a Joe Biden fan when he came in, but I've actually thought that he did a very good job.
Yeah, I think he's done. I think he has been, and I've said this before on the show, I'll say it again. I think he has been the most progressive president, period. Like in our lifetime,
sure,
and certainly in history. I think he has been the most progressive president that we've had. He's appointed the most diverse cabinet of people that has ever been appointed. He has made some really good, difficult decisions. He has not been perfect because he is a human being.
He's made some bad decisions too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's made some bad decisions. He's made some political calls that I think he should be criticized for. Like liking a politician does not mean that you approve of every single thing that they've done.
Absolutely right.
But here's the other thing that's important, I think, is that when we think about politicians, we are thinking about somebody that we are interviewing for a job, not whether or not we like somebody, not whether or not we owe something, some fealty or loyalty. This is about a person, an administration, a set of ideas, a set of principles, a direction for the government, for the government and for the country. That's what you're voting on. You are not supporting a person.
Not at all.
That's not important.
Not at all.
That's how you get Trumpism. If your loyalty is to more than a set of ideas and principles that this person embodies and seeks to put into practice through legislation or executive order or other means, if your interest is in a human being to be your boss, you're doing a democracy wrong. That's not proper. That's how you end up with Trumpism. Don't be that. Don't do that. Think about this job differently. It does not matter who the Democratic candidate is. You got to show up and vote. Because the most important thing that we do in November is beat Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
The rest will work itself out in fucking payroll.
Absolutely.
We got to be Trump.
I think, you know, some of the criticism that we got, some people were upset that we were talking about possibly, you know, re-energizing the party by nominating someone else instead of Joe Biden. There was a lot of people who were saying things like, you know, don't turn your back on Joe. And I want to correct those people and say, I don't owe Joe Biden anything.
No.
Joe Biden owes me everything. He owes the American people everything. He asked for a job as a public servant. That's a person who serves me, not the other way. I'm not serving him. So I don't owe Joe anything. If Joe does the right stuff, I will stand by him. If Joe does something that I think makes him less valuable at that job and less of a valuable candidate moving forward, it's not just what I should do. It's my duty to say to everybody else, we should think about something else at this point. Because my duty should be to the American people and yours should be too, right? We should think about the American people. And the best thing for the American people is not Trump. And if that means that somebody else has a better chance, a bigger boost because they're not Joe Biden, I want that person. I don't know if that's true. I've no idea if that's a real thing, right? If Joe stepped down today, I don't know if Kamala Harris, who steps in, is suddenly a better candidate than Joe Biden. I don't have that answer. I'm not fucking Karnak. I'm not holding an envelope to my head. I have no fucking idea. But I do know that between 2020 and 2024, there's been something like 20 new million people that can vote. So like, there's a lot of people, a lot of new young people that are coming in. I don't know that they're excited to vote for their grandpa.
Right.
They might be excited to vote for their auntie.
Dude, if you're 18, that's your great grandpa.
Yeah. No, honestly, you're not wrong.
That's your great grandfather. If you're 18, you know, the thing is too, at the general election level, politics is always a strategy of pragmatism. It is not a time for your ideals. Ideals are for the primaries, right?
Yeah.
Once you get to the general election, this is a game of pragmatism. It is a strategy of pragmatism. The most important thing the Democrats can do, they have the most important job that they'll ever do in front of them in November. That's to beat Donald Trump. Nothing else matters. I literally do not care who does that job. If it's Joe Biden, awesome. Great job, Joe. But the thing is, like, I'm not supporting Joe because I like Joe the person. I'm supporting Joe because I think he can do the most important thing that needs to be done, which is beat Trump. If I feel like he can't do that most important thing, which is to beat Trump, it's not a matter of like disloyalty. I don't have a loyalty to Joe Biden. I like him. I approve of most of his administration. Again, not all, but I like and approve of most of his administration's accomplishments. I don't have a loyalty to him as a person.
Yeah.
Loyalty to politicians as people, as individuals, is how we arrive at authoritarians like Trump.
Absolutely. I want to talk, before we move on from this Trump assassination attempt, Tom, about the conspiracy theories that immediately started circulating.
Oh my God.
And I saw these on the left too. Immediately,
so many
were talking about how this was staged. He was in the WWE once, so therefore he cut his ear. And
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, they were saying that
he
cut his ear.
Did he have wristbands on it when he did it with the little razor blades hiding in it?
He turns his hat backwards and he flips a switch or something.
He's got like his biceps tied up, you know, so they swell up on him. I did think it was funny that it came off the top rope before.
Right.
That. Yeah,
it's really crazy. Yeah. And it's nuts that after he got shot, they banged his head off the turnbuckle.
You wouldn't think they put a turnbuckle on a podium.
I don't know why you would even have that. It's ridiculous. But in any case, a lot of people said that. They said other stuff too. I want to remind people who are going to try to propagate this stuff that people really died. Like genuinely people died. They went to an event and they got shot.
Yep.
And this person, crazily enough, Trump, I guess at the time of us recording, hadn't reached out to that family at all to say anything. And Joe Biden did, and they didn't take his call.
They didn't take his call.
I think like we need to be careful, just like how we don't want to fill in the blanks when it comes to his political ideology, this 20-year-old's political ideology. We don't want to start pretending or filling in blanks where they don't belong on what happened, how it happened. Use Occam's razor when you watch this stuff. It looks like he got shot at. It looks like he fell to the ground. It looks like he was whisked away. All those things are true. A lot of people were saying he stood up way too fast. And you say, that to me sounds like the buildings fell way too fast.
Yeah, man.
It sounds just the same. It sounds exactly, when you type that out, always read it and say, is this something a 9/11 person would say about a building? Yeah. And then delete it and then shut Facebook off for the night, go take a bath and then go to sleep.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do.
And like, This came up in our home a number of times. You've got to fact check everything that you see. There's an enormous amount of misinformation and disinformation that's floating out there. And it started hitting all over the place, like right away. You know, there was like, and like really smart, well-meaning people that I know were sort of like, oh, you know, it looks like he didn't actually get shot. It was a piece of glass from the teleprompter. And then I was like, oh, I didn't hear that. So I Googled it. I look it up. Like, no, it's not. I Snopes it. Like, checked it out. No, that's not true. That's bullshit. There's so much of that that's happening. There's an immense, immense amount of it. You know, your point about like, oh, he moved too fast. He moved too slow. The people in the crowd didn't react right. It feels just like, you ever watch, do you ever watch like true crime TV shows? Have you ever watched any?
Maybe, like a while back, sure.
So if you watch those kinds of things, you know, Dateline and that kind of trash, yeah. You know, like whatever. But like when I used to watch that stuff, and I still kind of watch that stuff sometimes, but like when you watch that stuff, one thing that that always happens is people will say stuff like, well, you know, I listened to that 911 call and I really thought they should have been more upset. And when they interview actual experts, it's like, you can't predict how anybody's going to behave in an emergency. You cannot predict it. What you expect to happen in a time of crisis or emergency is not or may not be what you see.
Right.
So you should take the idea that you know how people are going to react, what they're going to sound like, how fast they're going to move, what they're going to be worried about. And I'll share a quick personal story. I lived in my very first apartment that I lived in. We had constant malfunctions in our fire alarm. So our fire alarm would just go off all the time. Like it went off for like about 6 months. It would just go off randomly. It went off so much, everybody would be like, fire alarm again. And after a while, people stopped going outside because you're just like, yeah, it's a fucking false alarm, right? So one time I'm sitting in my apartment and the fire alarm goes off and I'm like, yeah, right. And then smoke starts to pour in under my door.
Holy shit.
And I was like, oh, holy shit. There's really a fire, you know? And so that's a moment where like, you ever play the game, what would you grab in a fire? I discovered what I would grab in a fire. So I jump up and I grab my wallet. It was the only thing I could think that I might need. I grab my wallet, I shove it in my pants. I run out the door. The hallway is full of smoke. Nobody else is in the hallway. Everybody thinks it's a false alarm. Turns out it was a false alarm. Some kids set smoke bombs off in the lobby that filled up the whole space. The reason I tell this story is that in an emergency, you don't know what you're going to grab. You don't know what you're going to do. What you think you're going to do, how you think you're going to answer that question does not translate into what you do in a time of crisis. The way you behave in a time of crisis, the first time it happens might not be the way you behave the second time it happens. We anomaly hunt. We all do it. Oh man, I would have thought. I thought, you know, he didn't get shot in the ear as a piece of glass, or you know, those people didn't drop fast enough. Those people didn't move fast enough. The Secret Service should have hunkered him down, but behind their bodies, and he was standing up. And so that's no. Just no to all that. The Secret Service can plan for these events all they want, but until one happens in real time, that's the thing that happened in real time.
Right.
All the rest of it is speculation.
Yeah.
And like, you don't know. You're not like, raise your hand if you're in the fucking Secret Service.
Sure.
You
and
know?
Then, and then, you know, the thing with the glass, I think that's a way to take away from what happened to him.
It was,
right?
Yeah.
It's a way to chip away at something that you don't like this person. So you want to take away any kind of cred he has.
Right.
Whatever cred that he has, you want to take that away. And you want to say, well, yeah, he stood up afterwards and held his fist up, but it was because it was a piece of glass. It
right.
wasn't because it was an actual bullet. If he got hit with a real bullet, it had done, you know, so I
hear
see
that
the
all
exact
time.
I see that exact same thing. So, but yeah, I want to caution anybody who's going to call it a conspiracy. Just use Occam's razor and also point to the people who actually died. Unless you're some sort of crazy person who's thinking things are false flags or something.
Yeah, that false flag people are nuts. I also want to add another one because I saw a J.D. Vance conspiracy. I saw a J.D. Vance meme that was traveling around and it got some real traction. It has to get real traction to make it my way. I'll tell you that much. So I saw this meme and it was funny. And it was like, you know, this will be the first time we've ever had a vice presidential candidate who admits in writing on page 179 of Hillbilly Elegy that he once filled a latex glove.
I saw this.
And fucked it.
Yeah.
It's not in there.
It's not in there.
That's fake. That's not a true thing. Everything you see, like, I don't know how many times, but I'm going to say it till I die. Everything you see, you now have to check.
I saw that too.
Yep.
I saw that too.
I got, somebody texted it to me and I laughed about it. And then I immediately checked it. And it's not true. Every single thing you see, you have to check.
What
you
about
have
the thing
to.
About him saying he thought he was gay when he was a kid? Is that real or not?
I didn't see that.
Hold on, let me look it
so
up.
I didn't
well,
see
let's
that.
Look it up. This is another thing that's
this
going
is something
around.
I didn't see.
So might as well fact check it in the moment.
But like you just can't take anything for granted at all. Like literally anything. Never forget the time I convinced myself I was gay.
That's real.
Yeah.
So if you see the thing where he said, I convinced myself I was gay when I was a kid, that's real. The New York Times is reporting that's real.
Yeah.
So that one's real.
That's
but
real.
But the fucking a glove, not
right.
real.
Fucking a glove between the couch cushions, if you see that, it's not real.
And
it gets
that
propagates so fast.
Go to adamandeve.com, get yourself a fleshlight, put that in between the couch
cushions.
There you
go.
Also, if you're going to do that, you better name your couch.
Oh.
You do not do that to a nameless couch. Dare you? How dare you? They better have a name and you better be engaged.
If you want to spice it up at this ethnicity wise, you fuck the Ottoman.
You mind rubbing it for me?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, that's it. A little lower.
How's that?
Lower. Yeah, that's getting it. A little lower, though.
I can't get any lower than this.
I'll say you're rubbing my ass.
So the story comes from The Atlantic. Judge Cannon has gotten it completely wrong. In dismissing the classified documents case, she is ignoring both practical history and legal precedent. We knew she was in the bag for Trump from day one. And we knew that Clarence Thomas had given her a wink-wink and a way to do this. And she took it.
Sure.
And it's bullshit. And, you know, according to this article, which I like because it says the thing I want to hear, her dismissal of the case will get turned over on appeal. Yeah. I don't know that that's true. I have no idea if that's true.
I think there's a chance. And the reason why I think there's a chance is because they've already kind of slapped her hand with a ruler in the same circuit. So she's done stuff that they've said, no, what are you doing?
Right.
And so there's been judges above her that have been like, don't, no, stop that. And then they've made her go back and redo things. So there's hope there if there's already judges who already think this. The other thing too is I saw today Hunter Biden tried to appeal on this, essentially saying that the special counselor that was digging into things for him was illegal as well. And so therefore they should throw out his charges. I think that that's a great way for the people who are above Judge Cannon to look down and say, this is a both sides issue. We appoint special counsels and special prosecutors very specifically at the moment when we think we need it to be as nonpartisan as possible, as outside of the political sphere as possible. We want to make sure we get somebody who's unbiased and they're going to do the best they can. And they're not going to be within the structure of where the president can look over their shoulder and say something and say, oh, well, you need to change this or you need to do this. They're not in that structure anymore.
Right.
They're independent. And we need that sometimes. And I hope that more of this stuff gets pushed up so that she realizes that she can't do it. The one thing that sucks is Thomas's message allows for the person who, you know, if they start to do this appealing, that's a signal to whoever's appealing to keep going.
Yeah.
Get it up to me. Because you know you got at least one. And maybe since I put it in this decision, you got more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But here's what worries me. Do I think it'll get changed on appeal? I think it might. Like, I agree with you. I think it might. I'm hopeful. You know, fingers crossed. But then I think it will absolutely kick its way up to the Supreme Court. And we are already in a place where we continue to do everything in our power for some reason to weaken our ability to hold government officials accountable.
Sure.
The ability for the attorney general to appoint a special prosecutor is a way for the government to hold itself accountable, to create accountability measures for the people who are in power. If we have to appoint a prosecutor through legislative action, which is what Eileen Cannon's decision, if this were up to go up to the Supreme Court and become precedent that all special prosecutors now have to be appointed through this pre-Watergate process, this fucking ye olde fucking process, like, we're never going to get special prosecutors. We're never going to be, this would just be another whittling away at what makes our government accountable to us. We're going to do that at the same time that we've just anointed the president an immune from all prosecutions king.
Yeah.
What the fuck are we about to do? I feel like we're on the precipice of just saying whoever's in charge, it, like, this feels like the Kim family dynasty in fucking North Korea.
It does.
Like, it feels crazy.
Yeah, it feels like every single person is going to wish you into the cornfield.
For real.
To get away with it.
Yeah.
I think this is a horrible decision by her. It could, the best case scenario is it just delays it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get elected and it still goes through.
Right.
That's the best case scenario at this point. That's not great.
It sucks.
That's not great.
This should have
been something that we paid attention to over a year ago.
Yep. Yeah. She's been doing every single thing that she can to delay. And she might know that this will get pitched, right?
Yeah.
She might know this could pitch, but what she probably also knows is if I make this one bad call, I'll eat a lot of shit, but I won't get fired. And my guy, if he gets elected, will give me a Supreme Court position.
Maybe.
I mean,
wouldn't that be a slap in the face of the American people?
Can you imagine if one of those people steps down
and then he says, you know what, we're going to put Cannon in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was thinking about this on the drive up. I think this feels to me like she's saying, I got your back.
Yeah.
I will do every single thing that is possible, even things that make no sense, even things that put my career in some danger, even things that get my hand slapped, even things that make me look bad in front of my colleagues, which is already done.
She doesn't care.
It's already done.
Doesn't care.
Credibility as a legal mind is very much in doubt from everything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
But if you're her and you're like, look, I'm going to do all this, wink, wink, scratch, scratch.
How do you fucking look yourself in the mirror, man? How the fuck do you do that?
You got to wake up and be the worst.
Got to be the worst. You got to hate what you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So, I do too. So.
God, I hope I'm wrong.
I will say the other show that I do, the Lawful Assembly show with Craig, we've been covering sort of the bedrock Second Amendment decisions. So we covered Heller a couple weeks ago, and in this show we're covering Bruin and McDonald, which all kind of build on each other to give gun rights, more and more gun rights to regular citizens, right? And it's leading its way up so that we could talk about where our gun rights are now based on that sort of thing. And we talked about this case, but a couple weeks ago, Craig called it. He was like, no, she's absolutely getting the wink. Just like you said on the show, she's getting the wink. She's getting that, hey, you can... Don't, whatever you do.
Because that line from Thomas had no reason to be in the decision.
The only reason it's in there is a signal to people on lower courts to do this. And it's funny because after that, we covered a Supreme Court case where Scalia did the same thing, but with gun rights.
Oh, which was, I didn't hear that.
Basically saying, hey guys, we didn't cover all the ins and outs of this particular piece of legislation, and we didn't cover all the ins and outs of how gun rights are affected by this, but good conscientious people will bring those cases to us, essentially.
So come ye with your cases.
Just so you know, we got a 5-4 now and we'll still have a 5-4. And that's what and there's ways in which these people do this. These decisions are smoke signals. Sometimes they are.
Yeah. Were you surprised, not to get too far afield, but were you surprised by the recent Supreme Court decision that like upheld the ability of a state to say domestic abusers can't have guns?
I
was shocked.
I am, especially because if you read some of these other decisions where they talk about, they rewrite that Second Amendment to throw out the militia part. They rewrite that Second Amendment to make it seem like a self-defense is implied.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things that they're stretching in there. And it wouldn't surprise me that one of those people would twist themselves, but they're not to say, well, they might be an abuser, but they also have a right to defend themselves.
Well, like if you're an originalist, like you would have to say like, there's nothing specifically.
If you're an originalist, women are property.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
So
What the fuck? Why would you care?
But they always say, like, I think they said in the Dobbs decision that, like, you have to be able to point to something in the Constitution itself specifically. Yeah. That the right has to stem from.
They're originalists when they want to be originalists.
They're exactly
they're pick and choose originalists.
I think we call that fucking liars.
Fucking liars is a good way to put it, Tom. No,
no. I don't believe there is a man, woman, or child on my planet who does not. A year since we first received transmission of your historical documents, we have studied every facet of your missions and strategies.
So Cecil, this story is from Vox, but really we just need to spend some more time on Project 2025.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Project 2025, we covered this a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
We spent some time covering it. I think we did a nice job. But I think we need to spend more time, go through Project 2025 regularly and in detail. And I think we have to do that. And it was your idea, but like, this has got energy on the left right now, and it's fucking essential. Like, everybody should know what's in here, and everybody should know what's not in here.
Well, what's interesting is that I shared a meme that, and again, you know, sharing a meme, right?
Right.
You sometimes cook your own goose by sharing a meme.
Sure.
It was somebody who had written down a bunch of stuff about Project 2025. Here's Project 2025, and they just started listing stuff. One of the first things was no-fault divorce.
Right.
Well, Facebook tagged this particular thing as not completely true.
Okay.
Because they hired the Dispatch to go through, and Dispatch is a conservative newspaper, to go through and fact check it. And the Dispatch said, there's no mention of no-fault divorce in Project 2025. And that might be true.
Yeah.
But what they forget to mention is that the people involved in Project 2025, so they're all against no-fault divorce. So we have this example where it's not technically in there, but it's in there in spirit, in the sense that maybe it's not in Project 2025, but it's certainly within the plans of the Republican Party. They're talking about it right now. Many people, and that's just one, it's not just Ben Carson, right?
Right.
There's a lot of people. And these people are also very, very, very religious. And the most religious people out there, Christian monogamy religion, will want to keep reproducing that Christian monogamy.
Yep.
And they want to keep making sure that, especially many of these people think divorce is a sin. So you're talking about people who have been pushing this thing for a long time. So while I understand that maybe it's not in that project, it's also something that is true in spirit about the Republican Party.
It is.
And so—
And something that many of these people have been vocal about.
Yeah. And so I think that while things may get tagged, certain things as not particularly true or whatever, how they say that's partly false— look into what they're tagging partly false. Because they're very specifically talking about, well, they don't mention they want to ban abortion. But then you start looking at all of these people who are talking about women's rights in this country, and you look at all these different governors who have already banned it, and then you look at some of these senators in the Senate and some of these House of Representative people, they do want to ban it. Yes, they do.
Yes.
They absolutely do. So again, maybe it doesn't appear in those words in the project. That doesn't mean that's not what they want.
Yeah, it does not. Look, Project 2025, when it comes to these issues, represents a significant escalation of the right's continued war on women.
Yeah.
You know, and this has been in play and in place for a long time. They've talked about really three things, which if you put them together, you can see how they would work in tandem with one another. So stripping women of the right to have an abortion, undermining the right to contraception, and undermining or eliminating no-fault divorce.
Yeah.
These things in connection with each other absolutely will create a Saudi Arabian-style ownership of women by men. It absolutely does. There is if women are unable to not get pregnant, unable to address a pregnancy if it occurs, and unable to leave a bad marriage, they are essentially fucking chattel.
Sure.
They are essentially chattel because they will not have financial wherewithal.
Yeah.
Right. They'll be pulled out of the workforce because they'll be pregnant constantly. They'll be pulled out of the workforce. They won't be able to leave their husbands.
Yeah.
They'll be beholden to somebody else's financial largesse.
Yeah.
And it will create an underclass that women have to live within in a deepening of the patriarchy and a reestablishment, a reensconcement of the kind of like patriarchal hegemony that like we've worked so hard to try to break free of, and we are still not free of. It's a disgust, and all these pieces fit together. These are all bricks in the same wall, you know? So
yeah,
this shit's a fucking big deal. It's Handmaid's Tale type shit. And none of that is an exaggeration. These are all things prominent lawmakers have come out and said. There was a guy in Wisconsin, I can't remember his fucking name, but there was a guy in Wisconsin who made a comment the other day, maybe last week or the week before, that he wanted to try to take America back to the 1960s before the feminists, before like the liberal feminazis ruined meaning for men, ruined like the ability for men to have meaningful good lives.
Lord.
And it's like, yeah,
try more.
1960 is an interesting time to go back to if you're this guy, because that's before women, it wasn't only until the 1970s that federally women were allowed to even get things like loans and open up bank accounts and get credit and like have financial independence. It's no surprise he wants to wheel it back before then.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to read two pieces of Project 2025 this week. We're going to try to continue this on as often as we can. We'll go through and pick out little quotes. I didn't have to go far for these two quotes, Tom. These are both from the preface. So if you find these, they're on page 4 and I think page 6 of this 900-page document. So let's start, Tom, with the first one about pornography.
Pornography, manifested today in the omnipresent propagation of transgender ideology and sexualization of children, for instance, is not a political Gordian knot inextricably binding up disparate claims about free speech, property rights, sexual liberation, and child welfare. It has no claim to First Amendment protection. Its purveyors are child predators and misogynistic exploiters of women. Their product is as addictive as any illicit drug and as psychologically destructive as any crime. Pornography should be outlawed. The people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. And telecommunications and technology firms that facilitate its spread should be shuttered.
I want to point out that first line. Pornography, manifested today in the omnipresent propagation of transgender ideology. And then you go down and it's like, pornography should be outlawed.
Yeah.
Right? They're saying pornography is manifested today as in people that are transgender, and transgender people should be illegal.
That's exactly what they're saying. And notice too, I think the other really interesting part of this, but can we talk about the writing here?
I know,
writing is so, like, I don't even know what the fuck the word is for the writing. It is so purposefully obtuse.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the least clear language you could use, and very obviously intentionally so. Sure. It's obnoxious. Whoever wrote this is an obnoxious asshole. But so the other thing that I think is worth pointing out is they're talking about pornography, right? The people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Then educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. That presumes that educators and public librarians are currently purveyors of pornography. So what that means is that if you're thinking about pornography as what you see on Pornhub, they are thinking of something very different.
Yeah,
what they
that.
Are thinking of
not
is
that.
Not that. They'll include that in their definition.
Sure, yeah.
But they're specifically widening the net to be anything that they don't agree with, anything that is not cis, het, like,
vanilla sex.
Banal. Yeah. I like it. The most mundane, banal books possible.
Sure.
They're talking about anything that recognizes the truth of the existence of other people and other kinds of relationships. They're going to classify all of that material as pornography and all of the people who write or sell or lend that material as pornographers.
And you're not wrong, right? What you're talking about is these books that all these 90 moms are running around all over the country and screaming about and saying, Moms for Liberty say that this book needs to get removed. And it's a book about how a kid has some feelings that he might be gay or something.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that to them is pornography.
Yes.
And that means your teacher gets to be a registered sex offender in the world that they want.
Yep.
That means that the librarian gets to be a registered sex offender. They of course want to ban pornography like you know it, right? They want to ban it. Then there are states right now where Pornhub's not even available to
That's
you,
right, right? Yeah.
So if you want to go to Pornhub, sorry, you can't go there. They won't let you there. You need a fucking VPN in order to get in there. They won't even let you there. But the fact is that they want to ban that as well, but they want to ban other stuff and treat it like pornography.
Right.
Sexual education. Just simple sex ed.
Yep. Yeah. Anything.
A teacher puts a fucking rubber on a banana and then they suddenly get kicked out of their profession.
Yeah. This is, and you know, think about the downstream effects of this, like in every aspect. So we're going to have less sexual education. We're going to vilify and continue to otherize and recloset an entire generation of people who have fought, you know, a generation ago, they fought to get the fuck out of the closet. Sure. We're finally getting people into the mainstream. And like, there's this enormous pushback. Well, all those people are going to get re-vilified, re-otherized, re-closeted in order to be, you know, safe, in order to be free of persecution and prosecution. And then you're also going to have teachers. There's a fucking enormous teacher shortage. We don't even have enough teachers, and we're going to make it impossible or less palatable for people to be teachers. Less people are going to be like, that's the profession for me.
You're not wrong.
We're doing this with doctors and teachers. What the fuck society are we building?
Yeah.
Who's going to do the stuff?
You're building a society where people learn from religion and people are healed from religion.
Man, doesn't this feel like fucking Sharia bullshit,
dude? Sure does. Sure does.
You know, I was thinking about this week too, man, because like I took a week off and I fucking can't stop thinking about shit. But like I was thinking about this too, is, you know, there was a time in like Tehran when women went to fucking university and they wore pants and they walked around in like shirts and they weren't all in fucking, you know, wrapped up in garb where they weren't allowed to show their faces and there wasn't a fucking morality police and Sharia law wasn't the law of the land. That's not something that can't happen here. Our systems are not more robust than that.
No, you're not wrong.
They could collapse. Mm-hmm. The systems that we think are so fucking indestructible are so fragile. We could be in a Christian Sharia state. Like that.
Pretty easily.
We really could.
Pretty easily.
We really could.
Let's read the second one. This is the second piece about Project 2025. This is about Roe versus Wade.
Conservatives should gratefully celebrate the greatest pro-family win in a generation, overturning Roe versus Wade, a decision that for five decades made a mockery of our Constitution and facilitated the deaths of tens of millions of unborn children. But the Dobbs decision is just the beginning. Conservatives in the states and in Washington, including in the next conservative administration, should push as hard as possible to protect the unborn in every jurisdiction in America. In particular, the next conservative president should work with Congress to enact the most robust protections for the unborn that Congress will support while deploying existing federal powers to protect innocent life and vigorously complying with statutory bans on the federal funding of abortion. Conservatives should ardently pursue these pro-life and pro-family policies while recognizing the many women who find themselves in immensely difficult and often tragic situations and the heroism of every choice to become a mother.
So they go out of their way to get this dispatch paper to talk about this Project 2025 thing. And when they say they want to ban all abortions, they say, well, they don't say they want to ban all abortions. No, they didn't say they want to ban all abortions. What they want to do is they want to make sure that this is just the beginning. The Dobbs is just the beginning. And they are going to go to every jurisdiction in America and push as hard as possible to protect the unborn.
Yeah.
You're right. They don't want to ban abortion. They just want to push as hard as possible to protect the unborn. We're fucking splitting hairs here. Yeah. You know what the fuck they mean just as well as I know what the fuck they mean. They want to ban abortion. You're lying.
Yeah.
But since they didn't say it explicitly, read that and tell me that's not a fucking full total ban on abortion, and I'll call you a fucking liar.
And that is absolutely explicit too. That's the thing, is like, that's not even a dog whistle toward, that's everything but the word ban.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot read that in any way. You cannot read that in any other way than to say they are going to use Congress, not the states, right? Not the states. They are going to use Congress to do this work. Holy shit. When the Dobbs decision happened, the Supreme Court said, well, we're getting out of the whole abortion ruling business at the federal level. We're leaving that up to the states. That's on you guys. And they're just like, cool. Now that there's no protections, what can we do next?
How far can we push this?
Yep.
How far can we? And so, you know, you're going to see these things that are going to say, well, they didn't actually say this. They might not have said those exact words.
Yeah.
But they definitely meant it in spirit. And for the next several shows, we're going to be going through this and picking out passages and reading them to you so you can hear in its own words what Project 2025 is about. This is right from their fucking foreword. Directly, it's literally copy-pasted from their plan.
From their, yeah.
Literally copy pasted. And I'm going to keep doing that week after week because we need to know what's in there and what they're fucking planning. All right. That's going to wrap it up for this week. If you're a patron, we are finishing up Art of the Deal. Tom and I wound up reading Art of the Deal. It's going to be a funny show. I guarantee it. I have a ton of stuff to talk to Tom about the second half of that book. But we also read an article by the person who ghost wrote Art of the Deal. And we'll be covering that article as well. Really interesting article, long form article that I think really is very telling about Trump, who Trump is as a person. So if you're interested in that, you can go become a patron at a per episode basis, dissonancepod.com or patreon.com/dissonancepod. We would love it if you became a patron. We have salaries to pay. We have people who work for the podcast and your dollar, if you think the work we do is good, your dollar is definitely needed to pay the people who do this hard work. So please, if you are considering becoming a patron, we would love it if you became a patron. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to leave it like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno-Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo-quasi-alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy healing, water downward spiral, brain deadpan, sales pitch, late night info-docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards.
You just flick me in the
nuts. Shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your signs. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.